Hello and welcome to another episode of A-Minder. Today, we talk all about neuroimaging, with seven papers that use various imaging modalities in humans, animals, and computational modeling to study how the brain changes with Alzheimer's disease. Stay tuned.
Welcome to A-Minder, a podcast where we summarize the latest publications on Alzheimer's disease for you, so you can spend more time doing awesome research. For every month, you'll find a series of episodes by theme, and each comes with a bibliography. Whether you're in the lab, on the bus, or cooking your meal, we hope you find this podcast useful and accessible.
Hey everyone, I'm your host today, Ellen Kosh, and I'm excited to tell you all about some of the research going on in the world of neuroimaging today. For those of you who are new to A-Minder, I'll give you a quick lowdown on the podcast. We're run by volunteers from different walks of life in research, ranging from graduate students, postdoctoral researchers, medical professionals, and more, all with an interest in neuroscience and Alzheimer's disease research. Anyone can listen to our show, but our target audience is other researchers in the field of neurodegenerative disease. We spend a lot of time every month going through the Alzheimer's disease papers that came out that month, sorting them into different topics, and making bite-sized episodes covering those topics. Today's topic is brain connectivity and structural imaging. And in addition to this episode, you'll also find a link to a bibliography in the show notes on your podcast app. And if that link isn't showing up in your podcast app, you can also find it at aminder.com. In this bibliography, you can find all of the abstracts that are covered in today's show. The goal of our podcast is not to provide you with an in-depth look at each of these papers, but instead a quick snapshot of the papers that came out in the field that month. So I just use the information in the abstracts to write the summaries that you'll hear today. And it's up to you to check out the papers in more detail if you're interested in learning more. We really think this podcast will help you in your research, so give it a try today if this is your first time listening and see what you think. And if this is not your first time listening, then I'm really happy to see you back listening to the podcast. Thanks for your support. Now, let's get on with the show. This is an interesting episode because we have quite a variety of research that fell into this category this month. It was such a broad range that it was hard for me to divide the abstracts into sections for the episode, but I tried my best. In the end, I thought that a useful way to organize today's abstracts would be by the brain region that is of interest in the study, since often in our own research, we tend to focus on a specific region. Perhaps not surprisingly, the most quote-unquote popular region in the abstracts for today's episode is the hippocampus. So we'll start with three papers on how the hippocampus and its connectivity with other regions may be affected in AD. By the way, you'll hear me refer to Alzheimer's disease as AD from now on throughout the episode today. After the hippocampus papers, we'll have two papers on cortical regions. One of these is in humans and one is in animal models. And then we'll have a short break before we come back to our last two papers of the episode, which focus on nucleus basalis and the pineal gland in AD. We only have seven papers to cover today, so it'll be a quick one. Let's get started. Kicking off our hippocampus section is paper number one. This paper is published in the journal Archives of Clinical Neuropsychology by first author O'Shea, last author Smith, and all of the authors are from various institutions in the USA. The title of this paper is Hippocampal Subfields in Mild Cognitive Impairment, Associations with Objective and Informant Report of Memory Function. Dysfunction in the hippocampus is implicated in AD, and this paper explored how regions, or subfields, of the hippocampus correlate with memory deficits. They had 56 people with mild cognitive impairment participate in this study, and looked at the volume of various hippocampal subfields in these individuals. They do not describe their methods, but I assume they used the MRI to obtain the hippocampal volumes. Their results showed that larger presubiculum, subiculum, and CA4 dentate gyrus volumes correlated with better delayed recall scores. Fewer informant reports of memory deficits were found in the patients that had larger subiculum and CA4 dentate gyrus. So, These data suggest that changes to hippocampal subfield volumes could one day be used as a biomarker for Alzheimer's disease and/or for cognitive decline. The second paper of today's show, and by the way, for each paper today, I'm going to give it a number so that you can easily find it in the bibliography. So for paper number two of today's show, we have a paper from authors Adams and Yassa, first and last author respectively, and they're out of the University of California, Irvine. Published in Journal of Neuroscience, the title is Entorhinal Hippocampal Circuit Integrity is Related to Mnemonic Discrimination and Amyloid Beta Pathology in Older Adults. As the title implies, these researchers were interested in mnemonic discrimination, which is the ability to discriminate between stimuli that are novel and stimuli that have been previously seen. This can include very similar stimuli. So a high similarity example could be a photo of the same object, but from a slightly different angle. This study investigated whether changes to functional connectivity between entorhinal and hippocampal areas were correlated with mnemonic discrimination and amyloid beta levels in the brain. They used functional MRI, PET imaging, and structural MRI with 64 cognitively normal older adults. No AD patients were used in this study. So just in these cognitively normal adults, they had participants divided into low and high performing groups on different versions of the mnemonic discrimination tasks, and then this was compared with their brain imaging results. The first version was an object version of the task, and the second version was a spatial version. So I looked into the paper a little bit more just to get what the difference was between these versions, and just quoting from the paper, for the object version, each object is presented at the center of the screen when they're showing these different objects, while in the spatial version, each object is presented in a random grid position within the screen. So slightly different ways that the stimuli are presented in these two versions. What they found was that poor performance on the object mnemonic discrimination task was associated with hyperconnectivity between anterolateral entorhinal cortex and dentate gyrus CA3 regions of hippocampus. This was also associated with amyloid beta pathology and decreased volume of the entorhinal cortex. But functional connectivity didn't seem to have a relationship with performance on the spatial version, so the other version of the task. So the key difference that the authors discuss is that functional connectivity changes that they show are specific to the object task and not the spatial task. They describe some other results, as well as a discussion of these results' significance. You could read more about that in the full paper. The take-home message from the authors is that these changes to functional connectivity between entorhinal and hippocampal areas may play a role in deficits in object mnemonic discrimination in AD. Paper number three is published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease by first author Chowdhury and last author Lee. Authors are from various institutes in Connecticut, USA. The title is Hypothalamic Functional Connectivity and Apathy in People with Alzheimer's Disease and Cognitively Normal Healthy Controls. So upon looking at my script and looking at this abstract, I realized that I made a mistake at the start of the episode and accidentally misclassified this paper as a paper about the hippocampus, but this paper is actually about the hypothalamus, as the title implies. This reminds me of being in early psychology courses. I've just taught a Psych 101 course, and a lot of students got these two areas mixed up because of their similar name. But this paper is not about the hippocampus, it's about the hypothalamus. So I will make sure that is updated in the show notes for the different sections of today's podcast. Sorry about that little mistake, but I'm glad I caught it while hosting the episode. And now let's talk about this paper. This study investigated the role of the hypothalamic connectivity in apathy in the context of Alzheimer's disease. To do this, they looked at hypothalamic resting state functional connectivity and how this correlated with scores on the apathy evaluation scale. Make sure you check out the paper for all the details on how they conducted this analysis. I'll just touch on a small sample of the many results here. Overall apathy scores negatively correlated with functional connectivity of hypothalamic precuneus and posterior cingulate cortex. They found various positive and negative correlations for the functional connectivity of other hypothalamic and cortical regions for subscores of the apathy scale. I'll let you take a closer look at the paper to get those details. Using modeling, they found some evidence that the resting state connectivity of the hypothalamic precuneus and the posterior cingulate cortex may negatively modulate apathy and depression. In summary, the authors conclude that the hypothalamic connectivity is related to apathy and depression in AD patients. The next paper is also on the topic of apathy, a common symptom of AD, but focusing on not the hippocampus, not the hypothalamus, but focusing on cortical regions instead. The title is Macrostructural and Microstructural White Matter Alterations are Associated with Apathy Across the Clinical Alzheimer's Disease Spectrum. There are three authors for this one, Menka, Jones, and Veneri. They are from institutions in the UK and Italy, and this is published in Brain Science. There is evidence that apathy symptoms in AD are related to regions of the brain involved in emotional motivational processing. In this study, the authors looked at white matter damage in patients and in healthy controls from the Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative, which you might know as the ADNI database. This included 61 patients with apathy and 61 without. The apathy group had more neuropsychiatric symptoms and deficits on the clock drawing test. As far as the neuroimaging results go, they found increased white matter damage in the apathy group, and this was measured in various ways, including changes to macrostructure and microstructure. White matter damage was especially apparent in the structural connectivity between frontal lobes, fornix, and cingulum. The authors hypothesized that this disruption to structural connectivity between these regions may be the cause of motivational deficits and may worsen cognitive deficits in AD patients. If the topic of apathy and cognitive decline interests you, each month we release an episode and a bibliography on cognitive and behavioral changes in AD. For our current series, this was episode number 315. Check it out after today's show if you're interested. For the next paper, paper number 5, we're switching gears to an animal study of olfactory regions of the cortex. This paper is titled Altered Odor-Evoked Electrophysiological Responses in the Anterior Piriform Cortex of Conscious APP-PS1 Mice. It's published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease by first author Shen and last author Jiang. They are out of institutions in China. Like other neurodegenerative diseases, early stage AD is often accompanied by olfactory impairments. This study explores how the anterior piriform cortex, an important region for processing olfactory information, is affected at early stages of AD. They used the mouse model APP-PS1 to see how odor-induced electrophysiological responses are altered. This was done in vivo in head-fixed animals, while the anterior piriform cortex was recorded using multi-channel electrophysiology techniques. Animals were exposed to the scent vanillin, and neuronal firing and local field potentials were measured. What the authors found was the following. Conscious 3 to 5 month old APP-PS1 mice had significantly reduced firing rates in response to vanillin and reduced low and high gamma oscillations at baseline and in response to the scent. The results also showed that coherence between odor-evoked spikes and low gamma rhythms was reduced in these mice, and phase-locking strength in the baseline period was also reduced. The take-home message of this paper was that early olfactory decline in AD could be due to early abnormalities in the neuronal and oscillatory activities of the anterior piriform cortex. I personally would be interested to know if these results would differ with other scents, such as a strongly aversive scent, for example, perhaps in future studies. Okay, so we are going to take a very quick break, and when we get back, we just have two more papers to go to finish off the episode.
I want to take a short break to convince you to join me and the editing team here at Aminder. We are responsible for the high-quality, polished episodes you hear, and our team is looking to grow so that we can cover even more episodes in a month. If you're interested in learning the ropes, send us an email at amindrpodcast@gmail.com. We do have other positions on our team, if you're interested in those. I find it to be a rewarding auditory and visual challenge, and I love working behind the scenes to get the best out of our hosts. So if you want to feel like a superhero after editing out mistakes seamlessly, please reach out to me and to the Aminder team.
Nearly 1 million older Canadians live with a form of dementia. This number is expected to double within 10 years. And sadly, no solutions exist yet to dramatically reduce these numbers. It has to stop. Research can help solve this problem. We are 350 researchers fully dedicated towards preventing and finding a cure to dementia, and to improve care to those living with dementia. We are the Canadian Consortium on Neurodegeneration and Aging. The solution to dementia could be closer than you think.
This next article, paper number 6, explores cholinergic pathways in a forebrain area of the brain, the nucleus basalis of Meynert. This region of the brain is located within the substantia innominata, within the basal forebrain, and importantly, this region has been implicated in Alzheimer's disease. So this paper is published in the journal Brain by first author Nemi and last author Ferreira, and there are quite a lot of authors on this one, coming from many different countries, including Germany, UK, Czech Republic, Portugal, Sweden, and maybe more. There's quite a few authors and institutions on this paper, so a big collaboration. The name of this paper is Cholinergic White Matter Pathways Along the Alzheimer's Disease Continuum. Prior to this study, it was already known that the cholinergic nucleus basalis of Meynert and its white matter projections are altered in AD and in mild cognitive impairment. These researchers wanted to explore whether these brain abnormalities were also present in individuals with subjective cognitive decline, which is a condition where individuals subjectively report cognitive deficits but do not meet the criteria for cognitive impairment based on objective measures. This study used modeling based on human neuroimaging data of the cholinergic system. The model used data from 405 patients in the DZNE Longitudinal Cognitive Impairment and Dementia Study. This is where the abstract gets a bit more technical than my expertise in the area, and so for the details on how the model works, please consult the paper. To sum up their results, they found that at all stages of the AD continuum, which includes subjective cognitive decline, cholinergic white matter pathways were reduced. The integrity of the cholinergic pathways were useful in distinguishing between subjective cognitive decline and healthy controls, and actually better at this distinction than volumetric measures. They also report a role for the cholinergic white matter pathways on performance on memory tests in both subjective cognitive decline and mild cognitive impairment. If you're interested in learning more about the cholinergic system in AD, every month we release a bibliography on the topic of developing treatments that target neurotransmission in AD, and a big target for this, as you may know, is the cholinergic system. So if you go on our website, you can find the link to all of our bibliographies, and in there for each month you can find our bibliography for treatments targeting neurotransmission. Okay, we've made it to the last paper of the episode, and this one focuses on a topic that we don't usually hear much about in our episodes here at Aminder, calcification of the pineal gland. This one comes to us from the journal Medical Physics by first author Bakriva and last author Azad Chikov, out of institutions across Italy and the Russian Federation. The title of this one is Micromorphology of Pineal Gland Calcification in Age-Related Neurodegenerative Diseases. The progressive calcification of the pineal gland, which is the process of calcium deposits forming in this part of the brain, has been studied in the context of aging and neurodegenerative disease. But these researchers wanted to see how calcified zones of the pineal gland are destroyed over time in normal aging and with neurodegeneration. They used human pineal gland tissue obtained at autopsy from normally aging, vascular dementia, and AD individuals. Their methods to evaluate pineal calcification were microcomputed tomography, synchrotron-based X-ray phase contrast tomography, and immunohistochemistry. They found what they describe as moderate degradation of concrements, which are the mineral deposits, in aging individuals. They found degenerative changes to these deposits, including a hollow core and separated layers and cracks, in the Alzheimer's and vascular dementia samples. As you may or may not be able to tell, this research is definitely out of my scope of knowledge. So if you have lingering questions about this study, make sure you check out the full paper. It's always fascinating to see the kinds of papers that make it into my episodes and to hear about different avenues of research. It makes you realize just how complex the brain is and how many different ways we can go about studying neurodegenerative disease. Well, that's it, folks. If you're interested in exploring any of those papers in more detail, check the show notes on the app you're listening to us on or at aminder.com to find the numbered bibliography for today's episode. This was the last episode of our series on papers published in October 2022. Make sure to tune in to our other episodes from this series, and note that any topics not covered in episodes will still have bibliographies. So, if you're interested in the immune system or genetics, for example, we will have bibliographies available soon for those topics from papers for October 2022. We also have bibliographies going all the way back to when the podcast started in 2020 on all the topics that we cover in the field of Alzheimer's disease research. So definitely make use of those for your own work. You can find the link for all of these things in the show notes or on our website. As I feel like a broken record now, I think I've said that quite a few times, but I really want you to know where to get these resources. If you liked today's episode, we would really love it if you'd leave us a review and or a rating on your podcast app of choice. On Apple Podcasts, you can leave reviews, for example, and on Spotify, you can leave a rating. These reviews really truly help us to reach more listeners that would benefit from the show, and they really mean a lot. If you've already left a review, thank you. And if you haven't yet, thank you in advance when you do. This episode is brought to you by our amazing team of volunteers. Our sorting team were the ones who divided all the abstracts from October 2022 into bite-sized episodes for the month. I scripted, hosted, and edited today's show. Our editing manager, Anusha Kamesh, reviewed my script and my audio editing, and Laura Anbasi created the bibliography and the word cloud. Anusha also created the music that accompanies this podcast. You can find more of her work at AK Music on YouTube or on SoundCloud under her name. Our next series will start on February 8th with an episode hosted by me. This series will cover papers published in November of 2022. Look out for that on your podcast feed. And you can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter for the latest updates. We're currently recruiting more volunteers for our podcast. We're especially looking for help with creating bibliographies, marketing outreach, and hosting. If you're interested in these opportunities or in other ways to become involved with our team, send us an email at aminderpodcast@gmail.com or reach out to us on social media. We're also going to be starting a Patreon page soon and would like to offer perks to our Patreon members. If you have any ideas for perks that you think would be great to have, let us know. We'd love your feedback. With that, I hope that you found this podcast useful and accessible. Talk to you again soon.